It's Wednesday, January 7th, 2009, and you're listening to episode 131 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 43 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name's Chad.
I'm John.
And I'm Pat.
And my name's Chris.
The things we do for this hobby. Just coming back from my kitchen, I was sitting there looking at a bottle that's sitting on my kitchen counter, which I purchased simply to help indoctrinate Wayne into this little role-playing game cult, which is specifically I went out and got a bottle of Crown Royal just so he could have a little purple and gold bag as his first dice bag.
Standard.
I've always wondered how you go to a con or something and you see tons and tons of people with these very well-worn Crown Royal bags as their dice bags. And
we never see anyone with Crown Royal.
Never see anyone with Crown Royal. How many of these people actually drink Crown Royal?
I
bet not many of them.
I talked to a guy who knows something about that industry. And so
Royal whiskey industry?
But just liquor sales in general. And what he was saying is that many, many times Crown Royal has been asked by various distributors or other companies to start selling just their bags. And
they never will.
Because then they stop selling whiskey.
So McDonald's doesn't sell Happy Meal toys.
Yeah, you go into a lot of the grocery stores, at least around here, they don't even shelf them anymore because so many people just steal the bag.
Steal the bags. Huh?
Yeah, so if you can find Crown Royal on the shelf, but if you want a bottle that has the purple and gold bag, you have to go up to a counter and ask them to go to a cabinet and get it out for you.
I bet you can go on eBay and buy Crown Royal bags, and I bet they're cheap.
Oh, I'm sure you can. I mean,
I'm really curious now, so I'm going to look this up.
Alrighty, Chris.
Yes.
You want to talk about something, so go ahead.
Before we got on the mics, you were talking about something that was essentially kind of troubling you this week, and I guess the best way to summarize it would be last week we talked about Pat's character laying somebody out with a pipe. And this week, we're talking about somebody laying pipe in Pat's character's sister.
To explain this, it's going to take something of a dumb gaming story. But you know what?
What's wrong with that? We just had a dumb pipe laying joke.
We realize that most of our fans beg us for dumb gaming stories, and it's we who don't want to tell
them. All right,
so go ahead,
as we've mentioned, we've got a Sunday gaming group, and right now we're running a Skies of Glass game, testing the current revision of the rules. And in that game, Pat's playing a character, obviously.
Okay. Just to break in, you can get a lot of 20 Crown Royal bags off of eBay for $15.
Really?
Dude,
wow.
I am buying a table at the next con we go to.
And just selling
them for
$10 each. Well, I will make the
I hate to tell you what the next con you're going to is. It's what? Fear the Con, too.
Awesome. I don't even need to buy a table. I'm John.
That's
there
right.
There you go.
They all know
awesome.
Now.
I should place a bid on that tonight just to get them.
Yeah. Dan, let's do a plug for Fear the Con 2 real quick.
Oh, yeah. Fear the Con 2, March 6th and 7th. Go out to fearthecon.com. Be sure to sign up if you haven't already. And if you're interested in GMing, send an email to chat@feartheboot.com. Feel free to run whatever you want,
yes.
Whatever you're interested in. However, if you're interested in running something that isn't Savage Worlds or D&D.
Yeah, we'd love to have you. We have quite a few games out there right now, but by far, please, if you're interested in running a game, yeah, send it in. We could never have too many games.
I was preparing to jump to my own defense, but then I realized I've got 3 slots and they're all D&D.
Yeah.
So
I have 3 slots and none of them are D&D or Savage Worlds.
But you know, 3 slots and only one of them are D&D.
But you know, there's nothing wrong with it. Those are great games. Someone was just saying they'd love to see a little more variety, but you know what you're going to do.
I'm running first edition.
So
that's various.
You know, the seminar slots are filling up, too.
Are they really?
Yeah, we have people doing board games, a couple of people doing seminars. We have a stand-up singing comedian in one of those. Yeah.
Huh.
All
right, so Sunday.
This is going to be a cool con, man. We have a Magic the Gathering tournament, a War Machine tournament,
wow.
A Monsterpocalypse tournament.
That Magic the Gathering tournament, what they're talking about, actually sounds kind of cool. It's called a draft tournament.
Yeah, see, like when we say draft, it's like, wow, this is some weird
booster
new thing. But yeah,
draft?
This is like a
that's
common.
That's not new at all. That's
yeah,
like
that's a common standard.
15-year-old game.
I didn't say it was
thing.
New. I just said it was neat.
No,
but
it's, cool.
It's where you take, like, you know, 20 cards, and you get one, and then you pass to the left.
Right.
And then you keep doing that till you all have your deck. And then that sounds really
and
cool.
And everybody is trying to get red burn cards because you don't need deck cohesion for that. You just need another lightning bolt.
And then Pat's going to be there, and he will not wear
even
any
though
pants.
Lightning bolt is now restricted.
No. Pants are not allowed.
Oh, speaking of plug, before we tantalize people with these topics that we were talking about, Pat,
people like me.
Iron yes. Agenda, which you are a host on, ironagenda.com, mm-hmm. a War Machine podcast. You guys are doing something special.
Yes, we are. We actually have an event coming up on January the 17th.
It's a Saturday.
Which is Saturday. Yeah, Saturday the 17th. We're running an event at our local game store here in St. Louis at Game On specifically.
Which is an excellent gaming store. Absolutely. That I have been to. Store. It's fantastic.
We're doing a sort of a new type of a tournament. It's called the Pirates of the Meridius, and it's going to be a four-round tournament.
Mm-hmm.
And for information on it, if you're here in town, you're going to be in town that day and you want to come by and play, go to ironagenda.com. And you can find out some information on there, or shoot me an email, and I can answer any questions as well if you'd like.
FearTheBoot.com.
Story-based tournament using giant pirate ship models.
Yeah, this is not your standard.
It sounds fun.
It's going to be. Yeah. It's going to be a. It's a.
I'm playing in it. I can't wait.
Yeah, it's a 750-point list, but it is not a standard like a Steamroller 4. It's every round has a specific scenario that is going to be. You know, encountered.
Yep.
And it does. It tells a story. So
and it's
one have, round goes to the next, and there is a definite story behind
and
the
they
whole
have
thing.
Model boats. And this isn't a normal port of War Machine, if you're unfamiliar. War Machine's a tabletop fantasy war game. And you guys have model boats that the armies are going to be on.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. This whole thing sounds really cool. Like, you go to different islands, and you fight across the boats, like a pirate swashbuckling type thing. Yep. I'm really excited about this. This sounds very cool. There's a whole role-playing element.
Yeah, there's actually going to be some surprises in each scenario, too, that will pop up as the game unfolds.
So, Iron Agenda, ironagenda.com, and if you're in the St. Louis area, check out their event.
Okay, so getting back to our Sunday game.
Yes, where people are laying pipe and my sister. Yeah.
Is that the role-play escape you go for, Pat?
Yeah, apparently.
God, I wish someone would nail my sister. I need to play Skies of Glass.
We said it was gritty and realistic.
Yeah, yeah.
Gritty? Sounds kind of viscous.
Mm-hmm. No, it's gritty. It's a dark moist. Future.
So Pat's character has a sister.
Yeah.
Or
yes.
Dave made the joke throughout the game. Dave's a guy in our gaming group, also host of Iron Agenda, but Dave's a guy in our gaming group, and he makes the joke, the whole thing, that his character and Pat's sister, blah, 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 you get the idea, you know. Insert the typical juvenile humor here. All right, well, I decided to go ahead and use this as something of a plot point. So Pat's sister suddenly starts showing signs of illness, and they have her examined and come to find out she's pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I want to talk about here is not that specific event, but it's something of a game mastering trick that was going on in my mind while we were doing this particular plot point, which is a game master contingency plan. There's a simple truth of role-playing that we've mentioned on this show many times, which is that nothing is a fact until it has come out of the game master's mouth. What's in your notes or what's in your head has no bearing on what's going on in the world until you have actually dictated it to the players. And so what I did was this. I knew that in all probability, them having to deal with pregnancy and childbirth and child support and things like that would create an uncomfortable role-playing situation because they'd have to be taking care of this kid despite the other things going on, or Dave would have to become the deadbeat dad, which has some emotional baggage
to it. But it's hilarious
for
2 minutes.
Actually, yeah. You know,
post-apocalyptic social services just sucked.
So here's what I did. I decided that despite what it appeared, the child was actually going to be from a different source. I don't want to get into that too much, but I had kind of in the back of my head that this contingency plan, that if they actually seem to be taking to the idea of this kid actually being there, then I could change it at the last minute. So,
I think Dave looked at you and said, I don't want to role play with a kid.
Right. And
oh,
so
he did. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And
he
I don't
did.
Blame him at
no,
all.
He actually emailed me and told me that, which was fine because that's not what I planned. But the advice or kind of the point of conversation I'd like to draw out of this is that you as a game master, when you're writing these games, if you have a plot point, it's okay if you're a little uncertain of it, and even if you are certain of it, to maybe write different contingencies on here's different ways it can come out. For example, they need to find out this piece of information. They're going to pick it up from this guy's briefcase, but have a little contingency. If they don't pick up the briefcase, here's another way they can do it. And if you're not good at improvising on the spot, this saves you from either getting stuck trying to think it up, or thinking on the fly and coming up with something that the minute's out of your mouth, you wish you hadn't done it that way.
So do you think that it should be a whole bunch of simple if-then statements, or do you think it should just be ideas written in the margin of your notes.
I'd say like just ideas. Presume you're going to go this way, but just give yourself some little cues on different ways that plot points can occur, different ways a problem can be resolved. If your group is not responding well to this, here's a different way you can spin it that they might like better. If they miss a major clue, here's another way they can pick it up. If they kill this guy before he does something you need him to do, here's another way it can occur. And, you know, kind of write out one plot line for the game. But like you said, just have these little ideas in the margin of, okay, if this goes to hell, here's something that might help me save face, particularly if you're not that good at thinking on the fly.
And I had a question / objection to that until you made that clarification, Chad. I thought you were thinking just a bunch of if-thens, and I was thinking, oh man,
well, your plot knows would be huge.
A tree of if-thens starts real simple, but eventually,
all right, it's exponential.
20 minutes into a game expands to just crush your brain. But yeah, I mean, everybody just has little notes about side characters and side events and all that, and as long as you haven't shown the players, you can change it before you show it.
So here's my question for you GMs. To what extent do you actually do this? And by that, I mean, do you do this for a lot of your minor plot points, or do you only do this maybe for some of your more big ones? You have a few instances.
I don't do it at all.
Well, I know you're...
There is no contingency plan.
The contingency plan is the game.
Yeah. I said for your real GMs.
You know, I would say I mostly do it for big ones, but it's really... I don't know if they can go by big or little. It's just you sort of get an intuitive feel for the group. This is something they're likely to do or likely not to do. This is something that they're likely to object to or likely not to enjoy as much as I think they might or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's, you just kind of get this intuitive feel for your group. And sometimes they surprise you, but most of the time you can, if you know these people, you can call them before it happens.
I mean, most of the time we're going to be quibbling over sausage. So you're going to be okay.
And that's not even in the game.
What are we talking about here?
Oh,
let's talk about involved role-playing. I wrote as involved role-playing, and John has already objected to that.
What?
He told me it should be called LARPing.
Oh, yeah, it's LARPing.
And
if you stand up, it's LARPing. If you move your hands, it's LARPing.
Not true.
If you do any voices besides Darth Vader or a funny kobold, it's LARPing.
That is not true. Categorically not true.
All right, well, let's...
Well, you're categorically not true.
Don't even believe that you're here.
Let's put down the terms of this little debate point before we open up the can.
This is going to turn into this sort of, okay, what exactly is third base of LARPing?
Well,
we have the principles.
That's what I don't want it to be. I don't want it to be.
DMZ?
Right. What we're doing is we're saying we're not talking full LARPing. You're not in costume. You're not standing up, running around
the
table.
Right. Third base.
Everyone agrees on that. On the other hand, everyone agrees that sitting piously and chastely around the table with monotone voices and nothing but dice and pencils is not LARPing.
And boring.
Wherein is the jump?
Well, I don't want to get on that. I don't want to start to...
Okay.
My issue here is not trying to label what isn't as a LARPing.
What is your issue?
My question is this. What I want to discuss is this. If you are on that middle step, so you're not in costumes running around Denny's, but you're also not just sitting at the table talking in monotone. You're maybe doing voices or accents for your character. You're doing some hand gestures. You may be like...
Hand gestures, I can quantify that.
We're Italian. We do that normally.
But you maybe even kind of act things out a little bit in some subdued fashion. Now, let's talk about not whether that's LARP or not. I don't really care. That's not the point of this. But let's talk about how that either... Yes. Is it good for your game?
Okay.
Does it help or hurt the game? And if so, how?
Depends on the game. Depends on the players.
Okay. Expound.
If you are being funny or theatrical, and you can be theatrical, I mean dramatic, and you're capable of doing it. I'm not, so I don't try. Yes, it helps. Most of the time I've seen it, it's the Dark Lord of Denny's waving his vampire hands, embarrassing himself and everyone who's in his game.
It's vampire hands kind of like jazz hands?
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
It's when he's vampires.
You drop your grand slam, you put your black fingernails up in the air, and you cast a wizard spell, and you suck out their soul, and I don't know what you're
doing. And then you sit down, have a bite of your cheeseburger and fries. And
I think, without a doubt, it always helps. It always helps. I can think of really no instances when it hurts. Because
you've never seen a game master or even a player get so cheesy that it kind of brought the game down?
Well, it's all in your definition of cheesy. If they're doing something in character, then there's nothing cheesy about it. If they're doing it, then that means their character in and of itself is cheesy. But if you're gesturing, if you're doing accents, even if you're standing up while you're in character debating or expounding or whatever, No, all of that stuff helps. All of that stuff is good. There's nothing wrong with it. And indeed, I would, in my games anyway, when people do that, you know, that's XP bonus right there, because you're actually playing the character. And a fundamental thing here too, and John, I'm very curious to see, because you say you can't be dramatic and you can't be theatrical, and that's cool. And I don't have any problem with that. But my question to you is, when you describe character actions, do you say character name is going to go and do this, or character X is going to go do this, or my guy is going to go do this, or do you say, you know, or do you do it in character saying, well, I'm
leading. So the first person versus third person debate.
Yes, exactly.
I narrate actions and narrate most minor dialogue that I just want to blow by. I will speak in first person when it counts. I don't want to have an involved dialogue when some dude is just going to pick up his rope.
So you guys will say that in this debate, first base is third person or first person?
No, we're not.
No, because you switch between that. To me, that's a pacing issue.
Yeah.
First person is always longer, and it always begs a fairly detailed roleplay encounter.
Yeah,
I often like those. I don't want those for every single encounter every player has with every NPC.
There are definitely times when you should gloss over and you should kick into third person and just bypass a bunch of stuff. But, you know, I think even some minor things, you know, even the stereotypical sitting around in the tavern discussing news of the day when the innkeep comes up to deliver your food and you engage him in conversation, whether it's central to the plot or not, that's good first person stuff that is worthwhile to be, it sets a scene.
I agree with Chris largely, in the fact that, like, when I play character, not all the time, a lot of my characters have mainly normal voices, whatever. So I don't really use an accent or much inflection, whatever. But
right.
I have played some characters that do, like, I've played a crazy mad German scientist. So I, you know, go into German accent.
That was fantastic.
You know, and I enjoyed it. It was fun. It was, you know, goofy.
Yeah, and everyone was laughing and having a good time.
It was.
They weren't in serious terror of your.
Well, no, but I mean, when I interacted with whatever, I tried to stay that voice. I'm also playing. I'm playing a fourth edition campaign right now. I'm playing a dwarven warlord, and I actually am talking in gruff voices, like,
well,
you know,
and we had
a dwarf.
Josh at one of our games,
and
in the Deadlands,
Josh is very good voices, actually.
And you were saying, you know, well, Pat's voice was silly and people laughed. Well, Josh was playing a sort of southern gentry gentleman with that sort of, you know, I can't even approach it, but you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I know what you're talking
about. Yeah.
Oh, if you're good at it,
I'm your
it's amazing.
I'm your Huckleberry type.
No, that brings
voice.
A ton
it
to
is,
a game.
Oh, it's fantastic.
But
I loved it.
I would perhaps submit that
the voice
many
made me
more
gooey.
People
That's
think
right, Josh.
They can do it than can.
You know what? I don't want to stifle people from doing it because, now granted,
well, I don't stifle
Josh,
people.
Well,
I don't tell
I
people
know.
They can't.
I'm not saying you're stifling.
Okay.
But I think you're saying that, you know, hey, you may think you're good at it.
Tyrant
of
role playing.
Anyway.
Yeah.
But
this is John's
now,
table.
Granted, Josh and I both are actually, we have some theater background. You know,
okay,
I've
well, there
like
you
that.
Go.
And he's done, you know, some stage work.
I'm a boring ass
you know,
liberal arts
hey,
major.
That doesn't matter. Anybody can do it, though. And, you know, it just takes a little practice. I mean, it's just like anything. If you want to do it, great. If you're not comfortable with and don't want to do it, by all means,
do you want to know what my view is on it?
Nah, not really, but go ahead.
Just for sake of argument. I think the more you put into it, the better the game is.
Yes.
Now, I agree with John in that there are certain pacing issues. I don't even know an example, but basically...
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, you want to get past something really quick. The players don't care. You don't care.
Sure.
You are.
I think that's
you
natural.
Say this, I say this, we move on to the more interesting stuff.
Yes.
Pacing is fine.
Right.
But I think that the more you put onto it, the more voice you do. Not necessarily accents. I'm terrible at accents.
Yeah,
but
Chad, you never do accents or funny goblin voices.
But
you
I do
speak in first
voice.
But he does inflections. I know what you mean. Yeah.
And then
there's
more,
a different character.
It, like I joked earlier, John and I are of Italian heritage, and we talk with our hands. Yeah. Well, at least I do a lot.
I do frequently.
I do a lot,
and
too.
So
I'm Irish, but hey.
You know, I think there's that. I think that the more props you use, the better. I think the more you stand up, the better. I think that getting into costume would bring more to it. I think that standing on a set would bring more to it.
Now, you've gone beyond where I would go.
No yeah. way. I'm it's with you. I'm with you there, Chad.
LARPers don't even stand on sets, dude.
And that's why I said I agree with Chad, or I agree with Chris and Chad to a point. Remain seated.
The more you bring into the immersion of the game, the better the game is. Unless it's a totally different type of game. Unless you're playing something that's just really, really tactical, sort of what the jargon of the dungeon crawl is. Whether there's a crawl or a dungeon is irrelevant, but if it's more tactical base, I think that the rules will take away from, you know, the more the props, the acting, the voice. Conversely, I think if you're standing up there in full regalia costume doing your Shakespeare Queen's English voice, and then you have to like consult 300 pages of rules to see if you fire the spell off, I think that's going to kind of bring one down and bring the other down along with
Here's my take on
it. You have to balance it, but yeah, I think more the better.
I'm a pragmatist. All things with a purpose. To me, a role-playing game is an exercise in imagination, okay? I know a lot of people kind of squirm when you call it a make-believe game because it sounds very childish, and that is a very childish phrase, but to some degree, let's call a spade here. You're playing some kind of a make-believe game, all right?
My mom calls it children's games, and she's wondering when I'm going to grow up.
Right.
And I respond to her, kids couldn't play the games we play.
Completely agree. Completely agree. I think the word is accurate, but it has a connotation that isn't really accurate, but that's not the point here at hand. So, to me, the bulk of the game is occurring in my head. All right. There may be other people involved. There may be dice on the table, but the scene, the emotion, all of the things that really, for me, are the benefits of the game are occurring in my own head. Now, if the guy next to me is doing an accent and it's cheesy and it's not quite right because he's not a theater major, it doesn't bother me for one reason. I'm not taking the table at face value. He is cueing something in my own imagination. So if Pat's doing his German voice, I don't per se just take Pat as face value, but now in my head, I picture this German immigrant gentleman over in 1800s America, which
if
is
you
where
do
this
that,
game is set.
Why saddle yourself with the crappy accent? Why not just say it in someone's regular voice and then fill it out in your head?
Well, I think because a lot of times, you know, the human brain's only able to multitask so much and to queue up so much quickly. And so it's kind of...
Oh, I totally agree with you. I find it harder to ignore a really hammed performance.
Well that's where I would draw the line. If we're talking about like a level of quality, then you start, from my point of view, I have no problem with LARPing. I have no problem with voice and acting and props and all that. But if we want to get into the level of quality, then you start sliding from what real LARPing is into the joke, which is what we make all the time of the Dark Lord of Denny's.
Well,
that totally throws me out.
But keeping with kind of my first theme there of, you know, all things with a purpose, what I would say in response to that is I agree with you. That's where you have to draw the line. But I don't think, at least in my mind, you can draw a black and white line, because I think it's gone too far when instead of helping to add to that immersion or help you understand what's going on, you know, sometimes even on that note, it's a little bit easier just to show, OK, I pick up this like that, than it is to spend 30 minutes sitting on your hands describing it.
Yeah.
But if there hits a point where it is distracting me, it's now taking away from the game instead of adding to the game. It's pulling me out of that immersion instead of drawing me into it. But I don't know that I can give you a black and white line for that, because that's going to be different for everybody. So what's absolutely perfect for my game may destroy somebody else's game and vice versa.
So, you know, for me, my black and white line, if you're looking for that, for me, it would be if we physically all got up and left the table. So anything up to that point where we get up and leave the table, that to me is essentially, it would be LARPing then. So, you know, I'm in line for accents, I'm in line for standing, I'm in line for gestures and character idiosyncrasies. You know, that includes whether you're playing a character who has a twitch or who does something unusual, you know, with their hands or constantly rubbing their hands through their hair.
I like
whatever.
That stuff.
Props, all of those things, if it stays around the table, that to me, that's still regular role-playing. There is kind of a grayish area around there where I think that I may have done what you guys would consider to be LARPing once for a regular gaming session. That went
experimenting.
If you want to categorize it, it went from a LARP to a regular sit-down session at a table where we played part of the encounter completely away from where we normally played. And there were props involved, and there was character interaction and all that stuff involved. But then we all went our separate ways or left and then went to the gaming table and picked everything up from there. You know, and it was with limited success, and I think the players made the transition okay. But that, to me, is kind of that hard divider. If you get up and leave the table, then I think really then, you know, and then continue to game, you're LARPing.
I don't like even playing around a table. I prefer the couches approach myself.
Well, you know, and I guess table would be in quotes. Because
metaphorical
table. Table. Yeah. Because, yeah, if you're sitting around the couches in the basement, you know, then
it's the same thing.
It's the same thing.
I am moving toward minis, so you need the table and the map for that. But when you don't, I like it the way we did it at your place, Chad, with just a coffee table, and that was it.
Right.
Chris, let me ask you something about that, because we keep kind of edging into this territory, but the one place I don't want this to go is what constitutes LARPing and is LARPing okay? Because that really...
LARPing flies in the face of the one true Fear the Boot way of gaming, which is a united perspective we've all been promoting in total agreement with one another for the past 20
all
minutes.
All 11 hosts throughout the course of the show have one unified
group. That's right. But Chris, let me ask you something, because you talk about, well, you don't want to stand up and get away from the table. But here's the real question at heart, not whether that's LARPing, whether that's okay, but how does that help or hinder the game? What's your exact problem? Let's say I'm playing in your game, and for some reason, the mood strikes me right. I just have to stand up and act something out.
If you did that as character, if we were, you know, if we were engaged in whatever it was we're doing, and you as your character but if you got up as your character and started pacing around the room and still in character, talking and speaking, gesturing, all of those things, but the rest of us were still sitting at the table, we haven't as a collective group left that table, in my opinion.
Okay, because, so you're saying that the one person who stands out too much kind of distracts from the gestalt of the role-playing moment. Is that...
No, it doesn't distract. I don't think because...
It doesn't distract, okay.
No, because you... I would look at that as more being you kind of essentially being... You're being in character, you know, but we're not... You know, you're still going to have to come back and roll the die. We're not going to stop and say, okay, rock, paper, scissors, let's see if your diplomacy was successful. You know, you still have to come back down to the table. You still got to make your check, and we can proceed on from there. And really... If I was enjoying what you're doing and I was getting something out of it, as the person in charge of the NPCs, I might get up as well and then continue to debate that. A friend of mine, Scott, who's on the forums, long time ago, we had this one session where we were having a party argument and we're all just sitting around my parents' pool table playing in my mom's basement and we're just going at it. But then the argument got very heated. But we were all still in character, and it got to a point where Scott and I were on opposite ends of the table, and we were both standing up and shouting at each other, but it was in character for that moment. You know,
LARPing!
But that's not LARPing, though. That's not
I agree.
At all
LARPing. I'm with you, Chris. It's not LARPing.
I don't care if it's LARPing or potato salad. All right. Did that help or hurt the game?
Potato salad!
No, in fact, honestly, that helped the game. And he and I both agreed when that particular encounter was done, we both looked at each other and were like, that was really cool. And that really enhanced the game. And I think it also brought out more.
It developed
both of our characters more.
But if you boil down what you're saying, you're basically saying standing up helped your game.
Yeah, well, it did.
But I agree with it personally. I think that that's
there's
how.
There's nothing like the heated in character fight.
No, you got to be careful where you do
you
that.
You have to have the post in character fight kiss and make up cigarette.
Chad and I had an in character shouting match once. And there was a 3-year-old girl there who didn't understand, and she started. She freaked out and started crying.
We were really
because she thought he and I were about to go to blows or something. And it was so,
and because we weren't used to role playing around kids either, so it was our fault. But
yeah.
I don't know. It is difficult to define. I'll give you that, but I do think that there is that metaphorical table that if you all agree to leave, you know, then we're done. The Shadowrun LARP that I was talking about earlier, where we were kind of Shadowrun LARPed, and I had made sure that the setting and the scene and the timing was all fit to the genre, you know, I would consider that, I guess, as I think about it now, that really was more LARPing, because I saw a lot of those guys in the party behave in character, you know, and everyone was, you know, being in character, but there were some who were really taking it that next level where the guys who don't normally do any of the negotiating, they hung back from where the negotiating was happening and were essentially watching out for snipers, you know, on the rooftops. That kind of thing that you would normally do in a Shadowrun game and watching out for that sneak attack that they think is coming.
John is the one person who seems to have the strongest against bent here.
Against what?
Against acting out things as opposed to dictating them.
Okay. And once again, I'm not against. I just think you probably can't
do it.
You
are the tyrant of role playing.
Right.
You patrol St. Louis looking for LARPers. I know it.
Is your primary objection just that it's distracting?
Yes. My primary objection is it's like the girl who always sings along to the radio but sucks at singing. It just takes away. They think they can do it, and they can't do it.
But what if they're really good at it?
All right, let me ask you guys.
If everyone at the table likes it, do it. If you can do it, do it. I envy you. I can't. I'm not throwing stones here. I speak in my little monotone when I'm in character most of the time.
Let me ask you guys all a question. If you were at a table where three or four people were really getting into character and could do it, and you can't, how would you fit into that situation? Would you try to play along with them, you know, kind of rise to their level?
I'm always on, baby.
I know you, Chad. You're probably the most shameless person I've ever met in my entire life.
If I was in that context, yes. Because I would feel that my hack at in-character dialogue and accent and all that stuff would be less distracting to them than the mere dictation of my actions and dialogue.
All right, so let's ask the most important question.
I don't want to destroy their context. I just don't set it up for myself when I'm GMing. And when I'm playing, I almost always am GMing.
And I have to say, in John's defense, when you were gaming with me and my group, we had people who had various levels of role-playing all over the place. And some of them, like me, like stood up and made the gestures and pointed and did the voice and did the accents and sung the songs and did the dances and whatever. And then John didn't.
And I was not the farthest to the opposite end of that accent.
No, you were.
There were some people that would not speak in first person.
Right, or name their characters or things like that. But I will have to say that that never hurt the game. You know, you always say you enjoyed the games, and I always enjoyed you you in the game. And the different levels, I don't think it's mutually exclusive.
I don't think it is either.
I think that maybe when you get into paper, rock, scissors, and costumes and makeup, and people dressing up as monsters and running around hotels, yeah, I think that there could be some formatting issues there. But I think when you're all around a table and even doing high role-playing and high LARPing and acting, and you have other people who don't, if everybody's on the same page and everyone's cool with it, it's not incompatible. It totally works.
If the content of what you're experiencing is good, it doesn't matter if three guys are super in character and two guys are not. You know, if what you're playing is what everybody's getting into because they're enjoying what's being presented to them, then yeah, it doesn't hurt it if some are and some aren't.
As long as those two aren't really destroying the setting and the immersion.
Yeah,
I mean, if their characters are talking about, if they're still
participating in a positive manner, but that manner may not necessarily be playing, you know, super in character or in character at all. But if they're still contributing in a positive manner, then it, you know, it's all good.
I think there is a fundamental divide in the reasons and types of creativity of people that come into role playing games. Some people come in wanting to be actors. Some people come in wanting to be writers. Some people come in wanting to be directors. And we're all sitting around.
Some people
around
come in wanting to be stuntmen.
That too. And we're all sitting around more or less playing the same game with the same parameters. While the actor folks are doing their voices and standing up and waving their hands, the director folks are GMing, hopefully. And you know, the writer folks will make their backstories and will improvise on the spot and love doing it. They just don't want to try to talk like a Viking because they're not comfortable doing it. Maybe they don't enjoy it.
But they've just written a novel on their character background.
Yeah. And that's not just it. They like to role play him.
Yeah.
It's just their definition of role playing is telling you what he does, not of standing up and waving a plastic sword.
I think what all of this is sort of getting at, and you mentioned it just a second ago, John, is the immersion. And I think that's what's most important. And by that, I really mean what you mentioned, like as long as the people that aren't, say, doing the voice or whatever are, as long as they're still in character or they're not talking about football, whatever else. I think that's something that's just keyly important, because a lot of times what happens in a game, even the game that we're playing right now, our Sunday game, if you're in character and you're doing what your character would be doing and you're interacting the way they would be doing, that's great. What I hate is whenever all of a sudden we get to a point and I'll look at Chad and say, oh, you know what? We really need not to do this because that's not the smart thing, because that's not in character. I'm using player knowledge, not character knowledge.
Well, yeah, metagaming is its own beast.
I know it is separate, but at the same time, I think one of the things that we can get from this, just from the immersion into the character, however you do it, and you do it, with, you know, just in your own way, it's in your head. You're not doing a voice or whatever.
Yeah.
For me, it's using some voices or, you know, a particular mindset.
Pat like uses hand puppets.
I use the hand puppet.
That's actually
naughty
cool.
Puppets.
They're naughty. They don't wear pants.
It's not a common technique. You don't see it at cons a lot, but
telling you, damn it, I'm going to do a puppet LARP eventually.
You say that. You've been saying that for years.
I've been saying that for weeks, actually. But let me close this one out on a very important poll here. Yep. It really seems like a lot of people think we hate LARPs and hate LARPers, and actually the truth is we don't. We just hate,
John does.
We just hate Moat's LARPs.
Well, I think that it's not that we hate LARPing. I love LARPing, and like you said, Skies of Glass was originally written to be a LARP, and we have LARPed in the... Well, some of us have LARPed in the past, and...
I haven't. No. I would have had to kill myself.
I swear to God, Chad, if you get up and come over here and try to bite me on the neck, I'm going to punch you in the face.
I only do that when you're asleep.
Okay.
But...
And that's not your neck.
Yeah. But people in the past have written us angry emails and stuff saying, you know, you guys hate LARPing and, you know, you hate my people and all this sort of stuff. And it's just like, no, we don't hate LARPing.
Let me ask you guys a question. You would LARP and have no qualms about doing so if it was with
Tom Baker and Three Men in Dalek outfits.
Jessica Alba. Does it have to be two people?
No.
Okay. Because I don't think I could split my time.
You have to make a John LARPing sandwich.
Yes.
Not the kind of LARPing I was asking about, but okay.
You know, even with this new kind of LARPing John's talking about, I'd still go with Tom Baker and the Daleks. Oh, Daleks.
Wow. I would go with Morgan Freeman and James Earl Jones. I have no idea even what kind of a LARP we would do. I can't picture them doing some kind of like goth.
Throw Samuel L. Jackson into that and just go for the trifecta.
Wow. There you go.
Yeah.
You know what you all should do?
You know, like a
is YouTube the James Earl Jones counting to 10 on Sesame Street video. It's incredibly relaxing. It diffuses my anger whenever it rises.
Awesome.
To look this up now. Chris? Pat? Patricia?
Honestly, for me, because I'm assuming we're sticking with the whole celebrity thing here. So, honestly, if it was any celebrity of note, I would have no problem LARPing with him. And strictly from the sense that it would then allow me to call attention to the role-playing game hobby,
Chris,
in general.
Any celebrity of note is not a specific person or person.
You know what? I mean, honestly, Bret Michaels from Rock of Love. There you go. I'd go that low.
In my
celebrity choice, because really, as long as it gets pressed.
To be a celebrity, people have to know who you're talking about.
No, Bret Michaels, you're talking about the guy from what, Poison
or
whatever.
The lead singer from Poison, yeah.
People have to know who you're talking about.
Yeah,
Who's John Baker? I mean, I don't know who the heck.
I don't know who John Baker is either. But if you're a Doctor Who fan, it's Tom Baker and Daleks.
That's right.
I knew the Daleks.
Don't make me come up there and slap you.
They've said who.
It's only the longest running TV show in history.
They've announced number 11.
That's Meet the Press, buddy.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's Meet the Press. So I would LARP with an undead Tim Russert, I guess.
You
went there. I think I'd LARP with undead Tim Russett too. He's sure. A really good journalist.
Yeah.
And to LARP with a zombie,
right about
I
doing
mean,
the vampire LARP.
Then, yeah.
Because you have an undead. You can.
I'd rather LARP with undead Walter Cronkite because I could just do it today. I'd just call him over.
Okay. Pat,
You know what? I'm going to go along the lines of what John said, but with a little bit more of my own taste. And I think that would be someone like Cate Blanchett and Sigourney Weaver.
What?
Not the Sigourney Weaver.
So you like Sigourney Weaver. Chicks, huh?
Sigourney Weaver.
You like the mature
Galadriel
chicks.
Galadriel and Ripley.
She's kind of exactly.
Yeah, she is. She has an Adam's apple.
She used to be, but she was.
Sigourney Weaver of 1980s, whatever.
Watch Galaxy Quest. She's still got it. Of course, that movie itself is 10 years old.
Galaxy Quest.
They made Tim Allen funny in that movie. Special effects can do anything. I don't believe a damn thing I saw in that movie.
Alan Rickman throwing in low ball after low ball that made Tim Allen funny.
True.
Did you see Benjamin Button?
I haven't seen it yet.
They make some magical makeup work to make Cate Blanchett young. If she gives you a chubby,
she really
does. Right to it.
I think I've always thought she was beautiful. So yeah,
there was debate over that.
I don't care. I'm sticking with Tom Baker.
I am too.
People were like, "Galadriel is hot." No, she's ugly. She's hot.
Oh, I'll tell you another
curvy
one.
Curvy answers are kind of cheap cop outs to the question.
Anybody can call up a Google image search and wipe it off. We're talking about role playing with dolls.
No, I never knew.
Hot.
Okay, so Chad and I here in committee just vetoed your guys' answers. Hotties is not an acceptable answer. That's a cheap way out of the question. Who would you?
I actually would love to LARP with Miranda Otto or Kate Blanchett.
Or their acting skills.
They could be their Lord of the Rings characters.
Well, that's the truth.
Who's Miranda Otto?
These are, you know.
Eowyn.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. If I can think of some hot chicks that are also good actresses, like Mia Jovovich, I would actually LARP with her.
I would not say she's a good actress.
Yeah.
I love the movies.
She's good at doing really quirky characters.
Except the Resident Evil.
Okay. So you want me to name a character actor who I would not like to conjugate with?
Damn, yeah, actually,
really, it's going to take me a while. Directed and acted and
LARP with, not so.
All right, Gary Oldman.
Gary Oldman would be good.
Okay. Yes.
You know, can I just go back to Alan Rickman?
Yes.
He could be Hans Gruber. Actually, he could be Severus Snape.
Gary Oldman, I do Alan see a problem with our veto here. It's kind of swinging the other way.
And we can just play Harry Potter.
Yeah.
It's like the only acceptable answer has to have a penis.
No. You know what?
It can be the chick?
It could be a Helena Bonham Carter.
But you're not doing it for her body. You're right. Doing it for the acting.
You're doing it to role play, not go out on a date.
Exactly. Precisely.
I already told you a couple good ones. Alan Rickman and Gary Oldman would be great ones. I think they're great.
I think that you two would actually want to go out on a date with Alan Rickman.
Maybe.
And Gary Oldman. I think I might want to go out on a date with Alan Rickman.
Jeremy Irons was pretty compelling in the D&D movie.
Jeremy Irons.
I saw him act.
I didn't.
And if I had Alan Rickman, I could have both the Gruber brothers, and we could play Die Hard.
Chewing scenery. It was great. The Gruber brothers.
I'd say Viggo Mortensen and maybe William Shatner.
Shatner would be great.
Shatner would be good. Who played Elrond?
William Shatner.
Hugo Weaving.
Hugo Weaving. Yeah. Hugo Weaving would be a good choice. And then she's a British actress. Sense and Sensibility. Who's that actress?
I saw that.
Kira.
She does a lot of that.
She's much older. She's in a,
You're not talking about Helena Bonham Carter, are you?
No. She's in an upcoming movie with Dustin Hoffman. Oh, wow. Dustin Hoffman. She's coming up in a movie. But she's a very skilled actress. Emma Thompson, thank you.
Emma Thompson. I like Emma. Mm-hmm.
So, Dan, basically you change this from hot chicks to actors who happen to play characters in movies who you would happen to like to role play with.
I was trying to get, actors and actresses in general you'd want to role play with for the sake of role playing with them.
I see.
I stand by.
But what do we know of these celebrities other than the character roles that we want to...
Well, nothing, but that's the question.
I will also take Tom Baker and Cybermen.
Who's that?
Cybermen?
Yeah, what's that?
Don't worry about it. I know, but, it's
Shame.
A Doctor Who thing.
Okay.
It's a synth rock group from the 1980s.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
I guess we'll let this one die on the table here, so...
But don't let it get up from the table, because then it would be LARPing.
Yes, it would.
It'd be zombie LARPing.
Thank you guys for tuning in, and we will catch you next time.
See ya.
Later days.
Bye.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2009. Our theme song was written and performed by Tim White. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to FearTheBoot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at FearTheBoot.com.